My heartbeat is, first of all, I'd like to say that I'm not coming to you as an expert parent. You know what an expert is, right? An ex is a has-been and a spurt's a little drip. So maybe that's the only way I'd qualify. But my heart beats here. It's interesting, in the last little while, I've been thinking that we must start focusing more attention on reaching parents and reaching the children while they're in the homes. I see Vernon back there, and Vernon spends a lot of time working with hurting people. In the last many years of Grace in my life, we've spent quite a bit of time working with hurting people. And so much of it you can trace it back into childhood. I don't know what you find, Vernon, but so much of the hurt and the pain can be traced back to childhood. And so I believe that prevention is worth three million pounds of cure. So I'm just hoping that an evening like today can bear fruit. And my prayer has been that this could change generations in the future. So that's my heartbeat. I certainly don't feel like a successful parent. I look back and I see many of the mistakes that I made. I wish I could go back and, with knowing what I know now, and walk through it again. You can't do that. None of us can. I'd also like you to be, I'd like to say, just relax as being parents. I hope that tonight I don't create a paranoia in either you or your children. So we're going to talk about some heavy things. But on the other hand, I don't want you to be overly concerned about it. I just want you to be concerned about it and aware of it. I believe we can prevent so many problems. And so the handout there is Safeguarding Our Children. We want to talk about that. Some of you, how many of you were not at Penn Valley? Well, there's quite a few that were not at Penn Valley. Okay. We're going to start out looking at one of the teachings just very briefly that we did at Penn Valley. So types of parents. Well, I put three types of parents down here. There's survival parents, and I watch parents be like this. Well, we just got to get through this, and if we get through this stage, you know, the terrible twos. Well, they're not terrible twos. They're wonderful twos. And I want you to know, I just would like to share with you that I enjoyed being a parent. And I still enjoy being a parent. Tomorrow I'm going to be working with my son. He's 37 years old, and I enjoy doing that. I talked to my daughter this afternoon about some things about our grandchildren. And, you know, she, you know, hung up, and she goes, "I love you, Dad." And I said, "I love you too." You know, and we just were up there last week, and her pet name, my pet name for her was Princess. And I said, "Thanks for being my princess, and you're always going to be my princess." Yeah, it's just, I have a son and a daughter, and that's just the way I look at my children. I love my children dearly. They went through some tough times. They're not walking where I would probably choose to have them walk, but you know what? We have a great relationship, and they love God, and so I feel like a blessed dad. I really do. I think you always can look back and say, "Boy, I wish I could go back and do some things over." Well, we can't. And so God also, there are no perfect parents, and so we can relax because we're not going to be perfect. You're not going to be perfect. I wasn't, and I can't be, and you can't be either. Some grandparents here. That's another stage, and I believe that grandparents play a huge role in their grandchildren's lives and in future generations. I do not believe that parenting ever quite quits. And so I used to think that when you get to my age, I could just sort of kick it into neutral and coast, and I'm not finding it that way. And nor do I want to. I'm enjoying life, and I enjoy what I do, and my heart beats in this direction. Building marriages, talking about family, building relationships. We're doing a fair amount of premarital preparation. In fact, in a couple weeks here, in about a month, we're doing a premarital weekend. So if you have any couples that are dating, or even it's open to singles too, 16 and older, I just believe we need to prepare people for marriage. So that's my heartbeat, is preventing heartache. So survival parents, if only we can get through this stage. And I watch parents, I hear parents talk about that, and it doesn't matter if it's the twos or the years of puberty, or if it's the teen years. I hear survival parents. Don't be a survival parent. That's That's wrong. Default parent. What's a default parent? Well, a default parent is, well, I'm going to do it the same way my parents raised me. Now, how many of you want to parent the way your parents raised you? Hands? Okay, see, we got some good parents. You know, you have some good parents. How many? Raise your hands again. Raise them high. Okay, but there's a lot of hands that aren't up. Okay, and that's okay. I don't want to raise my I didn't want to raise my children the way I was raised. Now, I had good parents. I love my parents. But, you know, my parents didn't have a great marriage relationship. The very first, the best thing you can do for your children is have a marriage relationship that works well. And is there going to be struggles? Absolutely. We're man, we're woman, we're pink, we're blue. But we can work at it and we can get along together. And I think one of the greatest motivations for a healthy marriage is to provide a safe home and a healthy, secure home for our children to grow up in. We're not here to talk about marriage. Intentional parenting, that's what I believe in with all my heart. Intentional parenting. So let's talk about it. Train up a child in the way he should go. When he's old, he will not turn from it. Some of you know my brother Frank. Okay, Frank says, a trained child is teachable. Well, Frank's a teacher. He taught at Terry Hill. How many of you had Frank as a teacher? Anyone here had Frank as a teacher? No one? Anybody at SMBI? But anyway, Frank has taught a lot. And he says that a trained child, a child that is trained at home, they can come to school and they're ready to learn. He says an untrained child, you have to, when they come to school, you have to train that child before you can teach them. So it's important to train children. What are we going to train them in? He also said that children that come to school that have not received sufficient love and affirmation at home, you have to love them. And he says I become a surrogate dad as a teacher to many of the children. And that's something that's fascinating. Frank and I talk quite a bit. And one of the things that we see when hurting people come to see us for a hurting relationship, hurting marriages, whatever, I find that ultimately they're looking for a mom and a dad. They're looking, and mostly a dad. I just got a text on the way over here, and for some information, I texted her back, and this person, I've seen her once. She lives in Illinois. Do you know what she texted back? Thanks, Dad. So I'm telling you that because you have children, you have grandchildren, and you don't want your children growing up looking for a dad, do you? And looking for a mom. You want to be the dad. You want to be the mom. But I'm just telling you, the hurting people that I deal with, they're looking for a dad and looking for a mom. And it might be a spiritual dad, it might be a spiritual mom, but they still are looking for a dad and a mom. So I believe, I finished the book of Matthew, then book of Acts, and I started reading Luke this morning. And when it talks about John the Baptist, remember what it says about John the Baptist? Anybody know what it says about the John the Baptist? Why did John the Baptist come? To prepare the way. And how was he going to prepare the way? What does Malachi 4 say about John the Baptist? No. Turn the hearts of the fathers toward the children and the hearts of the children to the father. Malachi says, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. And John the Baptist in Luke 1, it says, so that he might turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, the children to the fathers, so that he might prepare a people ready for the Lord, prepared for the Lord. So dads, we play a huge role. And it's not that you moms don't, but dads play a huge role. Dads are the ones who form the value system in their home. They should. We should. And they're the ones that they should connect with their children. And that's what we want to talk about here briefly. So what do you want to train? There's three things. There's lots of things we want to train. But just some keys here. Obedience. You want your children to grow up being obedient to authority. Okay? And you want them to be obedient. So you want them to obey at a normal tone of voice. You all grow up, you all look around you, you all observe, and you all see. There's all kind of parenting models. And you know what? You're all going to parent different. I don't think that you have to fit a certain mold. You know, like Merlin was saying, you read a book and you know, here's five steps. Well, you know, I don't have five steps. Your model for your home is going to be different from your brother and sister's model over here. It's okay, as long as there's some basic things. And one of the basic things is obedience. And teach your children to respond at a normal tone of voice. Okay, if you teach them and you train them to respond in decibel levels, guess what you're doing? You're teaching them not to obey until you hit a decibel level. You ever see any parents like that? There's plenty of them around. Don't do that. And then say it once. Okay? Prompt obedience. Something I really appreciated my dad. My dad was a very loving father, but he said it once. After that, we were going to experience consequences unless we had a very, 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 very good reason. And it had to be very, very, very good. Rarely was it. So he said it once, and he said it in a normal tone of voice, and if we didn't respond to that, we were experiencing the consequences. I would encourage you to do that. Okay, train your children to obey promptly with a normal tone of voice, your normal tone of voice, and you have to figure out what your consequences are going to be. Okay. Honor. Teach your children to honor authority, and first of all, you. You are the authority. And to honor the rest of authority. In 1 Peter 2, Peter says, respect those who have the rule over you. He says, honor all those who God has established as an authority over you. And he goes down through his kings and all the way down through. And he goes into chapter 3 and he says, husbands and wives, you know, honor each other. So we need to teach our children to honor authority. Now, here, what does it mean to honor? It means that you put their position at a place of honor where you recognize that position and you respect that position. And in honoring does not mean obeying. Now, you with your children, they are to honor you. What does it say? Honor your father and mother. Did you know that command never quits? We are still, even as we get older, we're still supposed to honor our father and mother. But sometimes we have parents and we're older and they still try and tell us what to do and still try and control us. No, once you leave your father and mother and you establish your home, you no longer need to obey them, but you still need to honor them. And how do you do that? Okay, so teach your children to honor you. How do you honor you? You don't let them smart talk you. You don't let them talk back. You correct their attitude. Okay. Honoring is attitude. Honoring is tone of voice. Honoring is speech. Now, you, they need to obey because they are to obey you as father and mother. But you also teach them to honor and respect authority even when they don't agree with them. And then you teach them how to handle that respectfully. And that might be something you have to learn first. Okay. So how many of you really think a lot of President Obama? Don't raise your hands. Okay? Okay. But how many of you can honor his position? Okay? We all better. Okay? Because he is the President of the United States, and we better honor that position. We might not agree with virtually anything he's doing, and think he's really did our nation a lot of damage. We can't control that. We cannot control that, but we can honor the position. That's what we need to teach our children. You honor your teachers. You obey them unless they're asking you to do something that violates honesty and truthfulness. Honor each other. You teach your children to honor each other. And this is important, okay? Siblings are always going to be squabbling and fighting. Unless you have the secret to that, tell me what it is. But on the other hand, you teach them to honor each other. Okay? So you do your best. You are to train them. And do you know what it says? It says fathers are to train. And yes, mothers are going to spend more time with the children, but fathers, it is your responsibility to make sure those things are happening in your home. For example, if you have a child who's really giving your wife a bad time while you're away, you need to have a talk with that child. And what are you going to say to them? Okay. You need to say, you know, when I'm not here, mom is your authority. But when they are being sassy and not being respectful to her, Dad, you need to get in their face and say, you will not talk to my wife that way. Don't say their mother. Say, you will not talk to my wife that way. Because you see, they need to honor the position that she is your wife and you aren't going to put up with it. Okay? All of a sudden, your child will have a different attitude. Okay, that's just not mom. That's Dad's wife. Okay? And you put the fear in them. Okay? The fear of the father is the beginning of wisdom. Isn't that right? Okay. We'll talk some more about that pretty soon here. But honor property. You teach your children to honor each other's toys. To teach them to, they can ask, not just take. They can ask and then use it, but they can return things and make them responsible for it. But as you teach children on and on and on and on, as they get older and older, they honor and respect authority. Possessions, property. But they need to see us as older ones modeling that too. I remember my grandfather, he didn't have a harrow, and so he borrowed the neighbor's harrow. Now, this goes back way back when there were spike tooth harrows, okay? That goes way, way back. Okay, but before he returned it to the neighbors, you know what he had? Do you know what his grandsons do? He had them wire brush it and paint it. And it didn't come looking good, but it went home looking good. You know what? He taught us to return something better than when we got it. You teach children to respect and honor authority, each other, property. Teach them to have a servant's heart. That is so big. God calls us to be servants, and you want to teach your children to have a servant's heart. You see, the role of parent, the fallen nature that we all have is we all want to be our own God. Do we recognize that Jesus said, many will come to me in that day and they're going to say, Lord, Lord, haven't we done many wonderful works? Haven't we cast out demons in your name? Haven't we preached and prophesied in your name? And he says, depart from me, you workers of iniquity. Iniquity is defined in Isaiah 53, verse 6, where it says, all we like sheep have gone astray. Everyone has turned to his own way, and the Lord God laid upon the Son the iniquity of us all. You see, as parents, it is our job, it is our responsibility to train the iniquity out of our children. Eventually, they will have to come humbly before God and ask him to be their Savior and Lord, but as parents. So what is iniquity? Iniquity is wanting my own way. Don't your children want their own way? How do you train that out of them? If there's a candy bar to divide, do you know how to deal with the iniquity in them? You teach them to divide the candy bar. How do you do that? Well, if there's three, okay, you let someone cut the candy bar into three pieces, and you let the other two choose first. Why? Because they will be so careful to get it exactly right. But if they get to choose first, which piece is going to be the biggest? Okay, you train your children to make choices so that it is going to be right and correct. And so you teach them, and see, if they get something, and you teach them that brother or sister always gets to choose first, then they carefully divide. You train the iniquity out of them, the selfish self-centeredness. That is what our goal as parents is. Then it will be much easier for them to fall under the authority of an almighty God and a Savior. So that's very important. Safeguarding our children. That's what we want to look at. You have a handout there. I have some resources up here that you can afterwards come up and look at. Also, if you have questions, raise your hand. Let's make it an open forum. We can talk about things, but just you don't have to wait till the end. At the end, you can ask questions too. We'll do Q&A, but feel free to just ask anytime. You can raise your hand and talk about it. Safeguarding your children. Okay, abuse involves power and coercion. Okay, I run into, as in dealing with hurting people, I run into so many people that the problems get traced back to their childhood. And it's so prolific that I think it's worthwhile addressing and talking about. And that is when sexuality is awakened at an early age. And so we want to talk about that this evening somewhat, okay? Abuse involves power and coercion. The need is, as much as we're able, to protect our children from abusers by giving them the tools to protect themselves and to train our children to be responsible and safe people. You think about protecting your children, but fathers and mothers, we need to teach our children also what's appropriate and what's not appropriate so that they are not abusers as well. So let's continue here. Capture your child's heart. This is something that just has, you know, we touched on this up at Penn Valley. We did a whole teaching on it. We're not going to do a whole teaching here, but we're going to talk about it. There's three foundational things that I believe God placed in every single one of us. And to me, this is so vital for parenting. This is absolutely crucial for parenting. And that is, I belong, and I am loved, and I am significant. Okay? I'm valued. And then you add discipline to that. And when you add all those three together, then you will have, your child will have a heart that's secure. And a secure heart can rest and can thrive and grow and play and work and just enjoy life. Those three things are so foundational. I belong, I am loved, I am valued. And then you discipline, you put discipline on top of those. And so you add that up and it equals security. Four building blocks to build life upon. There they are. Love, belonging, and significance. And it produces security, freedom, strength, and courage. Here's what I see. God, Father God, knew that his son was going to go through some of the worst experiences that any man could ever go through. So what was Jesus going to experience? Well, he was going to experience rejection by his own people, and rejection is one of the most emotional pain, the most emotionally painful things that you can experience is being rejected, especially when you're rejected by your own people. He was going to be mocked. He was going to be made fun of. He wasn't going to be listened to. He wasn't going to be heard. And his own people were going to try and kill him, and eventually they would arrest him. They would lash him. They would spit on him. They would place a crown of thorns on his head. They would nail him to the cross, and they would kill him. And the Father knew he needed something to get him through that. So what I see here is the statement that Jesus heard twice. This is my beloved Son in whom I'm well pleased. You see, he heard belonging. This is my Son. And then he heard love. This is my beloved Son. And then he heard significance. I am well pleased with him. And I believe if our children, if we as dads and moms, if we give this to our children can handle life. I believe that with all my heart. Unconditional belonging and love and significance. Value. If those things are placed in our children's lives, they do not have to earn it. They get that just because they're your child. Many of us were raised in homes where we had to earn our value. We had to earn our way. We had to earn, we didn't experience love. Oftentimes, I'll have people sitting there that I'm working with, and I'll say, did your parents love you? And they'll say, yeah. And if you'd ask the parents, do you love your children? Yeah. But I always ask this to the people. I said, well, did you feel loved? No. So your child needs to feel loved. And so here's Father God, two times in public, saying to his son, once at baptism, once on the Mount of Transfiguration with Moses and Elijah and Peter, James, and John. This is my beloved son in whom I'm well pleased. He has something to say. Hear him. First Peter says, we heard this voice from the magnificent glory. So Peter goes back and refers to it, and he repeats it. We had this magnificent experience when the voice from God came and said, this is my beloved son, I'm pleased with him. You think if Jesus needed to hear that from his father, do you think your children need to hear it from you? I think so. I believe that with all my heart. Now, people say, well, if that's what we do to our children, how are they going to learn anything? Well, love, belonging, and significance is unconditional. But approval needs to be earned. Approval needs to be earned. So if you ask them to do a task, Do you praise them for doing it half-heartedly? Absolutely not. You send them back and make them do it again. But you don't give a 4-year-old a 10-year-old task. You give age-appropriate tasks. There's nothing wrong with stretching it, but you expect age-appropriate performance. If you're expecting 10-year-old performance out of your 7-year-old child, you might be pushing it, and you're going to create problems. But if you get 7-year-old performance out of a 10-year-old child, you make him go back and do it again. And you insist on it. In fact, if he's not cooperative, he gets some pretty strict discipline because he needs to know that his approval is predicated on his performance, but not love and acceptance. Not love and acceptance. If you have unconditional love, belonging, and acceptance, you can discipline firmly. And I believe it needs to be firm. I am a strong believer in firm discipline, where you teach children to obey, you teach them to respond at the first command, and you back it up with consequences. So, I belong and feel belonging. I am loved and feel loved. I feel needed and important to the family, and I know where the boundaries are. If your children don't know where the boundaries are and you're disciplining them, you're going to create problems. You need to establish the boundaries where in things that you're doing. And I know, I should probably have more illustrations about here's what you do. Well, if I would tell my son, you know, when I come home this evening, I'm going to work, and when I come home this evening, there's a lot of weeds in the sweet corn patch, and that needs to be taken care of. And then when that's done, the lawn needs mowed too. And you give him a task that you know can very well be carried out in the time that he has allotted for it. And you check with your wife to make sure she doesn't have things that she wants him to do. And so at the end of the day, when it comes home, you expect to have the corn patch weeded and the lawn mowed. And if it's not, you say, son, tell me about your day. I see that the patch is not weeded or the lawn's not mowed, or maybe one's done, the other one's not. He might have a legitimate reason that you can verify with your wife. If not, he might need a skip supper while he's finishing the task. There needs to be a reason. He needs to know that the next time. I'll give you an illustration that my sister-in-law used. She one of the rules in their home was that their rooms need to be orderly, and the beds need to be made before they went to school in the morning. And see, the boundaries, she already told them what the boundaries were. If that didn't happen, there would be no dessert for supper. Okay, and so if she went upstairs and found that a room was not orderly and the bed wasn't made, she knew that child would not receive anything for supper. And so at supper time, and she might, because there was a disobedient child, she might make sure that there was an extra nice dessert that night. Okay? That's okay. That's all right, because they need to know that they're going to pay a consequence. And so when everybody else gets dessert, that child doesn't. And no begging. No begging. You don't tolerate moaning, groaning. If there's moaning and groaning, that gets disciplined. Okay? No fussing and fuming and no giving in. If you do, you just lost the battle. You taught your children they can get away with acting like a brat. Don't do that. Okay? Say something and mean it and stick with it. If you do, you're going to have a trained child who, when they go to school, they're going to learn things and their teachers are going to like them. If you don't, the teacher's going to have to be fighting with their moaning, groaning, and fussing, just like you were. And you're going to be the cause. Let's not be the cause. Let's be part of the solution. Let's love our children dearly. Let's give them what they need. Because when those things are there, if you have love, belonging, and significance, then you can put firm discipline on top, and you will not damage your children. So let's look at a couple models here. And you see, I believe you can build life on that. So here's one of the models. Okay, here's the healthy model. Discipline built on belonging, love, and significance. When those are solidly in place, it produces, and boundaries are firmly placed, it produces security and liberty. Security and liberty. Okay, and the boundaries are a little thicker. It doesn't show up real well there, but the boundaries are thicker at the bottom than they are at the top. As your children get older, you start relaxing them. You want to move them from law to principle. when the children are young, you say, you know what? You may not go out to the road. If you do, you're going to get paddled. Okay, the road is dangerous. You take them out. It's okay to walk them out there and say, this road is dangerous. You go on that road, and they can be 2 and 3 years old. You teach them they may not get close to that road. But as they get older, what do? You go out and you teach them how to look both directions. I remember doing this with our grandchildren. You know, we went out to the road, and before you go across to get to the mailbox, and we did it with them for a number of times, you look both ways and make sure no cars are coming, and then you go across. See, now you taught them how to go get the mail. And then it's okay for you to say, hey, go get the mail, remember to watch both ways. And then after a while, you quit telling them to watch both ways. They have to make that decision. And if you hear the brakes squealing, you just remember they didn't look both ways. Okay. But they have to learn those things. They really do. And sometimes those are difficult lessons to learn. So it's truth and mercy balanced discipline. And that produces mature children. There's maturity there. I should have brought a handout with this on. I'm sorry. I didn't do that. It produces maturity. And it produces right concepts of God. You see, when we our discipline and the way we treat them, what kind of a God do you think you have? What kind of a God do you think you have? Do you think when you stand before him and you whine and whine, well, I didn't really want to look at porn, what do you think he's going to say? Okay, he's probably going to say, you know what? You knew that I was a just judge. You teach your children, you train your children like you believe your Heavenly Father would teach them. We teach our children to listen. We teach our children to obey. And listen, I know God is a forgiving and merciful God. We need to be forgiving and merciful parents. We really do. I found parenting to be difficult, but many times I would err on the grace side rather than on the law side, because I have a God who is heavy on the grace side, and I want him to know that too. But if I'm total grace, my God isn't total grace. My God is a God of truth and mercy, and so we need to be balanced with truth and mercy, and that produces right concepts of God, God's holiness and God's love. The next one is this: discipline built on performance-based acceptance. We don't have love, belonging, and significance in place, and they have to earn their love, and they have to earn their acceptance. I run into this a lot in dealing with hurting people. And so what happens is you're too strong on truth and severity, and you come down hard, and it produces you put fences up and say you may not do this, and you control by law, and fences create feelings of being controlled or trapped, and it produces anger and rebellion. It's performance-based acceptance. And it overemphasizes God's holiness. And it communicates to our children, I am not loved. And if you'd ask the parents, are your children loved? Yes, I love my children. I could go give you illustration after illustration. Just real recently, we were dealing with a young couple. They're engaged. Oh, no, they're not engaged. They're just dating. But he brought his girlfriend to our place because she was dealing with panic attacks. And you know what? It went back to the fact that there was just not a connection with Dad. He was just missing that connection with Dad. Our girls, your daughters, men, your daughters will get their concept of who they are as a woman. Their concepts of femininity will come from you as a man, not their moms, from us as a man. They'll learn it from the way we treat our wives, and they'll learn it in the way we treat them. Very fascinating. It says I'm not loved, and it produces wrong concepts of God. If we are harsh with our children, a lot of the hurting people that I deal with, their concept of God is somebody up there with a big stick just waiting to hit them as soon as they step out of line. My wife was that way. I remember one time I was speaking, doing a series at our church, and it was on, I kept referring to Father. You see, I had a dad who loved me, and he was a very balanced disciplinarian, so he was very strict, but I had a good concept of Father, so I kept talking about Father, and on the way home, Grace says, they don't get it. It's exactly what you want to hear from your wife on the way home after you've preached. Okay. Yeah, right? Isn't that right? I said, they don't get it. And I said, what do you mean they don't get it? She goes, you're talking about about Father God. And she says, most of those people do not have a good concept of who God is because they don't have a good concept of who their Father is, starting with me. You know, her concept of God was somebody up there with a big stick ready to hit her. And so you see, as parents, especially as dads, we model to our children, and we are going to give them their major concept of who God is. It's so important for us to be a mercy and truth balanced man. And mothers, you do the same thing. Mothers can damage God's image as well, because both male and female are created in the image of God, and when he puts us together, we are now one. But I'm just saying that fathers carry the greater load. Mothers, it's not much below where you, and it's not position. It's not responsibility. It's not anything. We are equal. But when it comes to the concept of who God is, us, you know, dads play a huge role in that. Huge role in it. You moms do too, but dads are huge. Really are. And then permissiveness. Unsure boundaries, lack of respect for authority, insecurity, disguised as arrogance. Boy, there's lots of that. Lack of self-discipline, irresponsibility, overbalancing God's love. And it produces children and adult bodies. And man, we have this all over the place. This is what we're dealing with today in society. Oftentimes, it's a reaction to overly strict parents. I watch people who've come out of very strict homes, and maybe some of you have, and it might have a huge impact on your parenting. What kind of a parent are you? You see, oftentimes if we came out of a very strict environment, we can go ahead and we can duplicate that in our homes, or we can do the opposite and we can go to this. And I see a lot of that. I see a lot of this. So we want to be careful that we don't react to overly strict parents. And it's another thing is parental insecurity. I had one father tell me, I said, you know, your children need some discipline, because he was asking for help. I said, your children need you to set some boundaries and be firm with them. He says, well, they won't like me. Oh, my goodness. Dads, it's not our job to be liked. I mean, I like to be liked. I want my children to love me and like me. And I think they mostly did. But there were times when they did not like me. And there's going to be times when they don't like you either. It's more important for you to be right and to be on track with them and to be firm with them and to be loving with them. That combination works. That combination works. But when we're so permissive, it says, I'm not significant enough for them to care. Right now, we're dealing with a situation that is just out of control. A girl is just a mess because her father didn't produce any boundaries for her. No boundaries at all. Virtually no boundaries. I wish I could give you more details on that one. I won't. So, here, we want to talk about empowering our children. We just talked about capturing our children's heart. That was number one on the handout there. Capture your children's heart. How do you do that? Well, I belong. I am loved. I'm accepted. Well, how do you do that? Well, I'll use the illustration with my grandchildren. When my grandchildren, they were staying with us for a week not too long ago. And when you first see your children, you come home from work, dads, what do? And moms, you can do this too all the time, but dads, oftentimes we work away from the home and we come home. What do you do when you first see your children? Did you know you can communicate so much by your facial expressions and your eyes? You know, I can say, hey, it's good to see you. Or I can go, hey, wow, it's good to see you. You know, when my grandchildren were there, and when I hear their footsteps coming down, I hear Cameron coming down the steps, and I was just waiting for him. As soon as I'd see him, I'd say, hey, good morning, champ. How are you doing? And I said, come on over here. And yeah, flop down on my lap, and we'd sit there and talk. But I want him to know that I delight in him. I want my eyes to communicate that. I do that with my children yet today. And they're older. My son's 37 years old. Hey, good to see you. You know, I want my eyes. I want my wife to see me do that when I come home. I want her to see my eyes light up, my face light up. You know, we can communicate a huge amount. And the other thing would be is, like with my grandsons right now, I know their parents are very busy. So guess what? Grandpa and grandma have a little more time sometimes, and I'll just simply say, you know, it is so neat to be able to be your grandpa. I'm so glad you're my grandson. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm connecting. I'm saying you belong to me. I'm so glad I can be your grandpa. That's belonging. I'm so glad you're my grandson. You belong to me. You can say that to your children. I'm so glad you're my son. It's an awesome privilege to be your dad. I'm proud of you. And you don't want to give him praise that is not genuine. If he didn't do a good job, don't say, I'm proud of you. Say, hey, you need to do that over again. But if he did a good job, say, hey, way to go, buddy. Give him a fist bump and say, that's pretty great. And, yeah, words of affirmation. Say, yeah, I tell my grandson, I said, you know, Papa loves you, and I want you to hear something. There isn't anything you can ever do that will ever get Grandpa to quit loving you. I'm going to love you as long as I have breath in me. I just want him to know that his love is, my love toward him is so secure, he can rest in it. Has he received some discipline from Grandpa? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I want him also to learn that Grandpa means what he says, and he's not just a pushover. Grandma's another story. Anyway. Okay, empower your children. Give them tools. Here's what I start seeing. Sexuality awakened too early. You have children. You have young children. You say, well, hey, I think I know what my children are doing. All I can say is I run into so much where childish curiosity about their bodies, about sexuality, and they're too young to even know what it's all about. But I believe that we as parents, you as parents, we must teach our children and give them tools so they know how to deal with their sexuality at an early age. They know how to deal with their childish curiosity. I have a couple books here. There's a whole bunch of, I shouldn't say a whole bunch, there's a few. But My Body is Private by Linda Gerard. It's an excellent, excellent book. It's one that I recommend. It's not necessarily a Christian book, but there's a note in the back to parents. But you can teach your children what is good touch, what's bad touch. I highly recommend this book. You're welcome to come up and look at them afterwards. It's just teaching your children that no one is allowed to touch your body in areas where your bathing suit would cover, not your brothers, not your sisters, okay, not your uncles, not your aunts, not your cousins. It's not okay. And then you teach them that it's not okay to touch anybody else in those places. That God really wants, our bodies belong to us. And so we must teach our children, we must give them tools. I don't even know how to begin to tell you that how prevalent it is. I hear it over and over again. Vernon, you run into that too? So much happens in childhood. Sexuality is awakened way too early. You know, so you give them age-appropriate answers. So let's keep going here. I probably have these on my notes anyway, but My Body is Private and When to Say No. When to Say No is a Weaverland Conference book. It's free of charge. It's decently done. It really is. And so these are free. If you're welcome to come up, you're welcome to take, what I have about maybe 10 up there, take them along. You're welcome to them. But you can read these to your children. It's good. It's fine. I have somebody who's working on rewriting it and re-illustrating it. But anyway, the other book, My Body is Private by Linda Gerard, I think that's probably the one I would recommend. But you're welcome to these free ones, and you can pick those up as many as you want at Home Messenger. They're free of charge. They do not charge for them. I just say we must prepare our children. We must give them tools. There's some friends of ours. I talked to him. In fact, I talked to the father on the way over here as I was driving over here. And a couple of years ago, they had some friends over to work on a project in their home, and their children. They have five children, and the other people had some older ones and a younger one, and they were all playing in the basement. Well, after the friends went home, their daughter came to him and said that the boy took her in the closet and locked the door and told her to take her clothes off. So you think that doesn't happen to your children? You think that won't happen to your children? You give them the tools. So then we ended up having to deal with it redemptively. Okay, now we had to deal with what happens afterwards. And so they called me. We're mom and dad to them because we helped them work through some things. And then they called and say, what do we do? What do we do? Well, I said, don't panic. But let's deal with it. Let's deal with it healthily. And so they got My Body is Private. I loaned them our copy, one of our copies, and they read it to their children. And you know what? They go over that pretty frequently when they get in. When they all get in the van, they're getting ready to go to a church gathering or to a friend's place. They say, "Remember what's okay?" And they go over they go over some of those points in that book. Okay, they want their children never to forget it. You do not want to create paranoia in your children. You don't want to create undue fear, but you want to give them the tools. You kick, bite, and scream. Okay, if anybody tries to touch you, and we talked about how that abuse usually deals with coercion. It's 8 o'clock. Are you okay? Can we keep going? You sure? But what you do is you want to tell them it's okay. You can always come and talk to me. It always has to be safe. You come and talk, and you tell us. And you see, oftentimes that boy was a bully. He was bigger. He was a bully, and he threatened her. Okay, if you tell, well, guess what? Her family, her home, her parents were secure enough that she felt good enough that she could come and tell them, and gratefully so. I've had a situation a number of years ago where the girl was 5 years old, and her uncle started having intercourse with her at 5 years old, and that kept going for a long time. She said, "I didn't have anybody else I could talk to except my cousin who was going through the same thing." And today, her life is a disaster. Okay, I'm just telling you, we give our children tools. I'm not trying to develop fear in you, but I want you to know that it is your responsibility to give them tools. There's some resources. Good pictures, bad pictures. This is a resource that's not on that handout. I just got this one today. I just found out about it. And it's called Good Pictures, Bad Pictures, Porn Proofing Today's Young Kids. I just got it today. I read it. I feel good about it. I wasn't sure I could recommend it. So I had ordered it a couple weeks ago. Didn't come, showed up today. So I brought it along. I read it, didn't read it real thoroughly, but I feel pretty good about what I'm seeing. And it talks about how that we prepare our children. It's not if your children will see porn, it's when they will. And this is not just a boy problem. This is not just a boy problem. I'm telling you, it's not. You do need to have your internet protected, but here's the whole thing. You can teach your children everything that you want to teach them, but your friends might not have taught their children what they should have taught them. And so you get together, and what are your children doing? What are the children doing? What are they doing out in the barn? I had breakfast with a man just the other day, and we met to talk about his one of his children who is divorced, remarried, now has more children, and it's a heartbreaking situation. And as we talked, I'm going, how do we deal with this? And then it was so interesting because it went back to when his son was 14 years old, and something happened of a sexual nature, and it was not dealt with. Dad didn't connect with him. It was not dealt with, and bitterness and anger developed in him. And later on, he married a neat gal, and they had children. But he never dealt with his bitterness and anger, and he split and ran. Church handled it very poorly. He was an angry man. Talking to his dad, and his dad said, he says, my parents didn't know what we were doing when we were little either. He says, my aunts introduced me to sex when I was 5 years old. Okay, why am I telling you this? I'm telling you this because you think it's not going to happen to your children. You need to give them the tools. You need to prepare them. One of these days when I have a big group of people, I'm going to hand out a questionnaire. Because I want to know how many girls were sexually abused, how many guys were sexually abused. I'm going to ask because I would like to know. Okay? Because when you have a group even this size, it's there. I can promise you. It's there. So we want to protect our children. You want to give your children the tools. Not develop a paranoia, but you want to give them the tools. There they are. Good pictures, bad pictures. We need to protect our children. We need to prepare them. And when you start talking to your children about things like this, okay, my body is private. You start when they're 3, 4 years old. You can read that to them when they're 2, 3, 4 years old. It's okay. And up until they're 10, 11, it's okay. You can read that book to them. You got to start young enough so that they have the tools to use. And you always make it safe so they can come to you. You want to be a safe parent. This is on our notes too. Who knows where we're going to run out of time. I take way too much time covering the material I want to cover. But when we start talking to our children at a young age about protecting their bodies and giving them the tools, guess what? If we don't talk to them until they're 12 years old, now we're going to have the talk with them when they're hitting puberty? No, you aren't. It's going to be way too tough and way too difficult. So you start early and you keep on going. Now, if you have older children and they're in their teens, that on that handout it has Passport to Purity, where Passport to Purity is Dennis and Barbara Rainey's material. There's 5 CDs in there, and it talks about talking to your teens about sexuality. You can sit there and listen to the CDs with your teens. There's 1 for the parents, and there's 2 for girls, 2 for boys. You can listen to it with them. It opens the door to talk about everything, and it saves you being embarrassed and red-faced. But if you talk to them naturally when they're little growing up, you don't have to get there. It can be some of the normal, ordinary, daily thing that you're going to do with your children. Not daily, but it's going to be an ordinary thing that you're going to do with your children. You're going to teach them about their sexuality. Where do you want your children to learn about sex from? Where did you learn it from? Do you want them to learn it from the same place you learned it from? I don't. I didn't. I wanted my children to learn it differently. Be careful not to plant paranoia. Childhood should be an enjoyable learning experience. Okay. Childish curiosity, the age of wonder. You know, childish curiosity is normal. And so what I try and truthful, age-appropriate answers. Your little children, I know that, you know, I just encourage, if the children ask you questions, give them truthful, age-appropriate answers. Age-appropriate. If they're 3 years old, you give them a 3-year-old answer. And you tell them the truth. You call body parts by body part names. Don't make up names for them, okay? And you give them age-appropriate answers that are truthful. And when you do, if you satisfy their childish curiosity, if you shut down their childish curiosity, you're going to create problems. Unanswered curiosity develops into preoccupation. If you try and hush it up and push it down and you don't want to answer it, guess what? They're going to find answers, I can promise you. If you have babies and you're changing their diapers, let them help with changing the diapers, even if they're the opposite sex. It's okay. They need to learn that plumbing is different too. Okay? And you give them age appropriate information. This you know, we are living in a time when Satan is using sexuality to destroy God's image. And we have to be very proactive, intentional about teaching our children the right things about their sexuality. We must. I don't see any other option. I don't see another option. And you start by protecting them and giving them the tools to use. Unanswered curiosity leads to vulnerability. Okay, if you don't give your children the tools, and you know, I see it over and over again, a cousin or somebody else, an older child, has got information way beyond their years, and they're going to introduce it to your children. If you tell it to your children right, and they can come and they can talk to you anytime they want to, and it's safe to talk to you, and you will give them age-appropriate answers, and you're going to deal with what they're dealing with in life, they're going to be okay. They are going to be okay. Because they know they can trust dad and mom to give them truth and satisfy their curiosity. Be a safe parent. We already talked about it. It must be safe for your child to tell you everything without fear of punishment. And if they tell you something that you don't want to hear, you better listen anyway, because maybe somebody already is talking to them or showing them something. It must be safe for your children to ask you anything and be given a truthful, age-appropriate answer. We already talked about that. You must be your child's educator, and you must be your child's protector. It's important for you to know what your children are doing and where they are. Would it have been okay to put all those children over there without an adult over there? Absolutely not. You need an adult over there. Why? Because of childish curiosity. We go to Family Harvest. Okay, Richard Neuswinger is our pastor, and it was interesting. My wife we bought a house next door to the church there, and my wife went upstairs to look at the rooms upstairs because they put new carpet and everything else, and one of the little kids was saying out there, they're in there doing something naughty. So my daughter opens the door. Well, there was a boy and a girl in there, okay, at church. So what do? You make sure there's glass in the doors, and they're going in. And you make sure that somebody is around. Those children mustn't be over there playing by themselves. You might have taught your children. Your brother in the Lord might have not taught their children. Okay. Are you okay? Is this okay? I don't know what this is what I see. This is what I am running into all the time. Be a wise parent. Discern between childish curiosity and wrong behavior. Don't punish childish curiosity. Okay, punishing childish curiosity can push curiosity into preoccupation. Children are naturally curious. It's okay. It's the age of wonder. They wonder about their bodies. They wonder about what's going on in their world. Keep that age of wonder. Okay. They shouldn't be exposed to garbage. Okay, I think you're all wise enough parents not to have unprotected internet for your children to be on. Okay. Interesting enough, we were dealing with a 12-year-old girl not long ago. It's been a few years. Time flies. And she was into some of the worst garbage on the computer, and the parents had no clue. I happened to be working on their computer, and I ran into it, and I go, "What is this?" And we traced it back to their 12-year-old. So it happens, and that was a 12-year-old girl. Think of the images that she now has to deal with in her brain. Correcting wrong behavior without step two, and that's empowering. You see, if we correct wrong behavior and we never empower them, see, there might be some wrong behavior involved, but instead of be careful how you deal with wrong behavior, what you want to do is you want to talk with them, you want to hear their heartbeat, and then you want to re-empower them. You want to go back and you want to use those tools. If you haven't used those tools, you can go back and use them. You go, you know, you get my body is private, or it's okay to say no, or when to say no. Be a wise parent. Watch for changes in moods and behavior. If you see your child acting really different and it's consistently for a few days, you know, just one day is probably not a big deal, but you know, watch for mood changes. If you've been visiting somewhere and you go home and then that child gets real quiet and then you don't want to accuse or anything else. You just want to start asking questions. You just want to get close to that child and find out what's going on. Because maybe something is going on, and be pretty persistent about it, but just by asking and just watch. You don't want to make accusations because you don't know. Individual connecting time to ask, is your heart happy? Okay, that's if the child's small. You don't want to ask your teen; they'll look at you like you're whacked out. Okay, find out if all is well with them. You do want to talk to your teens about if everything is okay with them. You want to connect with them. You need it. That takes time. TIME. I don't know how to do it without time. I dated my daughter. Okay, every so often she and I go out for breakfast, and one of those times that we went out for breakfast, my wife does not like me to use this illustration, but I asked my daughter for permission, so I guess I can go ahead with it. I'm not trying to do something against my wife. She just doesn't like me sharing my dirt. But I'm going to share it with you because the reason I want to share it with you is because I want you to learn from my mistakes. But I'm sitting there having a neat breakfast with my daughter. It was a really nice place. We go out for breakfast every other month or something like that. And we're just sitting there eating breakfast, and she goes, "Daddy, do you love me?" And I go, "Where did that come from?" I said, "Of course I love you." And I'm sitting there eating, and all of a sudden I said, "Honey, why did you ask if Dad loves you?" And she said, "Do you remember the time you shoved me up against the kitchen wall?" I said, "Yeah." That was about 3 or 4 years before. She was an ace at irritating me. And I just grabbed her right here and just went, bang. I said, "You will not talk like that again to me." I didn't handle it wisely. I handled it out of anger. And I said, "Honey, I am so sorry. Can you possibly find a place in your heart to forgive Dad for handling it so poorly?" Because you see, just that gave the door, Satan to get a little grip in there to say, "I wonder if Dad really loves me." Because I treated her with anger. And it was harsh anger. It was just, we were just standing, and I just went, boom, against the wall. That's not the way you handle a daughter. She probably, I think she was like 12 or 13 years at the time. And now, when we were having breakfast, I think she was like 16 years old. And all those years, she was wondering, I wonder if Dad loves me. And I was so grateful that that I took her out that morning because I got the opportunity to ask her forgiveness. And when I said that, she goes, oh, sure, Dad, it's okay. But see, it wouldn't have been okay if I wouldn't have asked for forgiveness. Know the environment you're placing your children in. Babysitting, child sitting, overnight stays. Okay, I remember my niece was in a home, and she was in her early teens, and things did not go well in that home. She crawled out the window and walked home a couple miles. Okay, you need to know what's going on before you let your children just sleep over any place. I don't care if it's a brother or sister in the church. Our children were not allowed to go to our deacon's place. Because I did not want my children in that environment overnight, because I didn't trust it. And I got a lot of flack from my children from that. But you know what? Later on they said, you're right, we know. Okay, so we need to be wise parents. You need to know what the environment is like. And just because it's family doesn't mean it's okay. Family doesn't mean it's safe. You need to be aware. It's your responsibility to make sure where you put your children for childcare, it's okay. It's all right for you to say to the mom or the dad, whoever's going to, you know, that home, is your home safe for my children to be in? You need to be alert to what's going on. You also want to sense, if your children do stay someplace, once again, you want to sense their spirit when they come home. If they're happy and okay, they're probably all right. But if you sense that there's something not okay, You better start asking questions and talking to them. Well, I think we're going way too long here. Deal with abuse redemptively, and we're pretty well done here. Care for the abused. Do not, and we're not even going to go there because let's just stop there. Because you know, hopefully you won't have to deal with that. But if you do have to deal with it, you deal with abuse redemptively. You care for that child's heart. You don't start punishing the child for being a victim, even if it was childish curiosity or whatever. You don't discipline them in that way. You care for them, you teach them, you instruct them, and especially if it's childish curiosity, you don't discipline it. But if it once they get older and they're the instigator, now you have to deal with it in a different way. But if you teach your children early and young that they must be safe people and they must not be the perpetrators. Anyway, there's more to cover here, but let's just stop right there. Well, any comments? Any questions? You didn't bring any rotten tomatoes to throw or anything like that. So.
I just want to affirm what you're saying.
You see it, don't you?
A lot of my work was with men, and it often started their curiosity 12, 13, 14 years old.
Yes.
And all of those years, and it often started right there. So I just affirm that you're getting that message to us here.
Thanks for your encouragement. Yeah. Might not be being communicated well, but I just, to the best of my ability, I just believe this with all my heart. Yeah. And, you know, there's some tools up here. Come up and look at them. There's the garden wall. There's some books there for young children. I think you have a handout there with the resources on. But like Passport to Purity, don't let your children go into their teen years without talking to them about the changes that are going to happen in their bodies and being prepared for it. Yeah.
I was just going to put a plug in for Passport to Purity.
Mm.
And my wife did it with our daughters, and we did it with my sons.
Mm. Yes.
Driving to the mountains or whatever.
Yes.
And it was an incredible time. It's great material.
Yes.
It's beyond great material. It's a way that you never connected with your son before. And how to put my youngest say, he just said, Dad, I didn't know this stuff before, and it just makes sense to me.
Yes, 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 yes. Because you see, now he trusts you. Because you were willing to stick your neck out. I bet it wasn't easy the first time.
It wasn't, but it's done in such a way it's not difficult.
It's not difficult, right. But it's not comfortable. I should say it's not that it's not easy. It's not comfortable. But, thanks for your testimony. Wow, thank you, thank you, thank you. That's powerful. Men, do passport to purity. Women, do it with your girls. Guys, do it with your... And you know when your children perhaps need it, but it's better to err on the young side. What time? When did you do it?
We did it when he was 12.
12. To me, that's the right time to do it. Because one of the things that I would like to... And we'll probably talk about this on another session. I would like to see that we make the transition from boyhood to manhood, from boy to manhood, and from girl to womanhood. We need to make that transition. We need to eliminate hormone-driven adolescence, because that's where lots of problems happen. But thank you so much for that testimony. Any other comments?
You know, stuff like that, like how, with the balance and all of that.
Mm-hmm. I think if you go over the book, and maybe do it every 6 months, and just say, hey, you don't say, don't let anybody touch you, just say, hey, you remember what we talked about? And why don't you use the name of the book, My Body is Private? You know what that means? Go for it. Have fun, but keep in mind what you learned from that book. And then you let it go. Yep, you let it go, because you don't want to develop paranoia. But on the other hand, you always want them to know that, and then being a safe parent, that's a big thing. Don't matter if somebody says they're going to hurt you or hurt mom and dad, don't believe them, you come. You must always tell us, we will protect you, it will be okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. Thanks. Anyone else? Any comments? God does not give us a spirit of fear. He gives us a spirit of power and of love and of sound mind. Do not be fearful of parenting, but let's be intentional parents. And let's use the tools that we can. Let's use the tools. The problem is we haven't been using the tools. My heartbeat this evening was to bring some tools, give you some tools, and encourage you to use them. Father, thank you for our evening. Father, would you bless every dad and mom that's here and give them the comfort and the courage and the wisdom and the discernment to just walk through life with their children as mom, as dad, as representatives of you, showing them truth, teaching them about life and teaching them about the important things about their bodies like you've designed them, their sexuality like you've designed it. Thank you, Father. Thank you, you're a perfect Father, and you are a powerful Father, and we love you, and we ask you for that power from you in us and upon each of these parents as we parent and as we become grandparents as well. Thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.